Hello and welcome to the Grazier's Grapevine, where we hold lively discussions on all things grazing. I'm your host, Jen Albright. This podcast is brought to you by the Pennsylvania Grazing Lands Coalition. Hi, friends. Today we will be speaking with Aaron DeLong. He is with PASA Sustainable Agriculture, and he will be discussing several things, one of which will be the Dairy Grazing Apprenticeship Program. And I hope you enjoy. And I also hope that you and your families have a very safe, very healthy, and very happy Thanksgiving. Hi, friends. I am here with Aaron DeLong. He is the Delaware Valley Program Manager for PASA Sustainable Agriculture. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
Beautiful. Can you, we're Zooming it today, right? Good old COVID. So Aaron, tell us a little bit of your background.
So I live in Chester County, and I grew up between Chester and Delaware County, Pennsylvania. My stepfather was a vegetable farmer. My mother was a commercial flower grower, and I worked on farms in Chester County through high school and college. I worked in research science for a number of years, and then I managed organic vegetable farms, CSA market primarily, for about 8 years. And then I started working for PASA about 5 years ago. And I started working for PASA because I had a pretty good handle on what I would describe as regenerative farming practices, particularly in annual vegetable crops and flowers. But I wasn't really clear how those systems could be very profitable. I'd known a lot of farmers who were doing things quote unquote the right way, but they were going out of business. And I felt like working with PASA, I might be able to get a view of farms that were doing really ecologically powerful farming practices and also making a good living doing it, or at least a living wage. And then PASA basically asked me to lead the organization's work in grass-based dairy, centered around a formal apprenticeship program, the Dairy Grazing Apprenticeship. And through that work, I definitely got exposed to farmers who are doing it the right way and are making a living doing it. So that's kind of my background. And today I'm the lead administrator for Dairy Grazing Apprenticeship in the state, and also the Delaware Valley Program Manager, handling educational and research programming in the eastern part of Pennsylvania.
So it sounds like you have a pretty good passion for this. I mean, you're a lifer.
Yeah, you know, I think I did try other, really I tried one other significant career path in research science, and I have tremendous respect for for scientists and the work they do, but I enjoyed being in the field more than being in the lab or behind the computer. Yeah. So I went back to production farming, and really I wound up at PASA again, partly because I was like, well, I want to farm, but I also want to make a living and be able to support, you know, family. So
yeah, that's important. So can you speak a little bit to the background of PASA and what they are and what they do?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So PASA will be 30 years old in 2021. That'll be our 30th winter conference, annual conference. And the conference is really how PASA began. And, you know, the lore, the story that I've been told is that basically it was a lot of Penn State students who and farmers in the state college area who were interested in organic farming practices before the organic standard existed, and who were trying to figure out how to do regenerative agriculture. At that time, I think sustainable agriculture was really the kind of the buzz phrase. And they were coming together once a year, the Nittany Lion Inn, I think, in State College, to just exchange best management practices with each other. The land grant universities at the time weren't doing a lot of research around organic farming practices, regenerative practices. It was much more focused sort of optimizing production and heavy input agriculture. So the farmers began gathering and doing information exchange among themselves. And, you know, I think that's really important to understand because that's the heart of PASA. There are a lot of organizations in the sustainable agriculture realm now, 30 years later, but our character as a farmer-based, member-based organization, whose kind of core mission, part of the core mission is to empower farmers as leaders and teachers of the craft of farming and agriculture. That's a bit unique to us, and it's something that still really drives our work and view.
Well, and it's grown so much since then.
Yeah, we're about 5,000 members. Our bi-weekly email goes out to about 20,000 people who have opted to receive it. So we're not spamming them. And you know, in the last few years in particular, PASA has sort of regrounded itself in a real farm-based research, farmer training and development direction, in addition to farmer-to-farmer exchange education. So it's we've grown a lot in the last 5 years since I've been here, with the establishment of two different apprenticeship programs with our soil health research that's got out-of-state partners now across the country. So yeah, there's been a lot of growth.
Yes, and actually I wanted you to talk to us a little bit more about the apprenticeship programs that you have.
Sure. So I'll start with the one that, you know, we've mentioned dairy grazing apprenticeship. The other apprenticeship program we run is the diversified vegetable apprenticeship, which PASA developed ourselves in Pennsylvania, got registered with the state, and have been administering for a couple years now. And that program is really going gangbusters. Dairy grazing apprenticeship, we began administering in Pennsylvania in 2016. And we did that in partnership with the organization's base in Wisconsin. DGA is the acronym. And that program is actually in about a dozen states around the country. We were one of the early adopters, Pennsylvania and PASA. And essentially the idea of the program, DGA was the first apprenticeship in agriculture registered at a state or federal level. It's now registered at a federal level. And the idea was to create a professional training mechanism for this particular area of agriculture, patterned after the training path for other formal apprenticeships for other skilled trade occupations. So essentially it's apprenticeship is what the skilled trades have been using for centuries, and skilled trades, we're talking welders, electricians, and modern day plumbers, pipe fitters, apply that kind of educational model to farming, where an apprentice, where a student is getting on the job training, working full time for a farmer, and really learning the physical nature of the work and how to do the work and sort of managing tasks. And then the other aspect to apprenticeship is providing related technical instruction, online coursework, scholarships to conferences, seminars, industry meetings, like when Organic Valley has their pool meeting, inviting the apprentice to that, so that the apprentice can learn, you know, with a related technical instruction, you learn the why behind the how, and you kind of get the two sides of the equation, both the practical training and a bit of the book learning that you might get in college or university. And then when the apprentice finishes, they're ready for a management level position and they can really begin their career. Agriculture is a little different than the skilled trades, where in the skilled trades, you kind of know you have a job waiting for you. You don't always in agriculture, but you know, I think anybody who farms knows that it's not a typical occupation. It's not a 9-to-5 job. It's really a way of life. And it's hard to learn it in a university, but working on a farm with a kind of a formal mentorship program can really help someone get a good view of what the life is and how to be successful at it.
And how many applicants do you normally receive?
Well, it's a rolling process for dairy grazing apprenticeship. The application is rolling. So people can apply at any time. And the mentors, the legal term for an apprenticeship is master. So the master grazers, as they're dubbed, can also apply at any time to be part of the program. And when a farmer wants to be part of the program, we go and we assess their farm. And then we have a meeting with a national apprenticeship committee who then decides whether to approve that farmer as a good mentor who can take on apprentices within the program. And if they get approved, then they can match with an apprentice. And sometimes we'll help farms find apprentices, but often it's a process that happens outside our role, and farms and apprentices find each other.
Wow. It sounds amazing and very involved. With the apprentices, what is their application process like?
So for masters, it is kind of involved. And the reason for that is we want to be sure that the people who are serving as mentors are ready to do it, because it's not just managing an employee. You have to take extra time. You have to be willing to stop and talk about, you know, signs of mastitis and talk about why your pre-milk or post-milking procedures look like they do. Talk about evaluating a paddock for grazing rather than just telling the employee, move the milk to, you know?
Yeah.
So it is more rigorous for masters. For apprentices, it's not very rigorous at all, to be honest. If they go to the Dairy Grazing Apprenticeship website, which we link through PASA's website also.
Okay.
We have a DGA page on our website, but that links to the national site where all the states are gathered. For apprentices, all they have to do is fill out basic personal information, you know, name, where they live, stuff like age is optional. And then write a statement of intent to some extent. Why are they interested in being an apprentice? And then if they want to attach a resume or any other materials, they can. And then they have an online application that master grazers can view and reach out to the apprentice and contact them. And the apprentice can also see the master grazer profiles and reach out to them and ask if they're interested in hiring.
My goodness, this sounds like such a wonderful program. With the masters, is there any sort of like a train the trainer before they become a master or before they bring on an apprentice? Do they get some guidance as far as, you know, how to train?
Sure. So I think, again, DGA was the first apprenticeship in agriculture in the country. And there's definitely been a learning curve. And you just put your finger on one of the big lessons that we've learned is, we need to give good professional training to masters and kind of continuing education services to masters so that they can learn how to be good trainers, good teachers. So it's an ongoing process. One thing we do as part of the program is we have each master apprentice pair has a assigned education coordinator. And so that education coordinator visits the master apprentice pair typically once a month and checks in, essentially asks how it's going. There's a list of about 50 skills the apprentice is expected to at least demonstrate some competency in before the end of the apprenticeship. And so the education coordinator might review some of these skills with the master grazer and the apprentice and see where the knowledge set is at. So there is some professional facilitation of the master apprentice dynamic. And the hope is that, again, the hope is the people who are approved are inspired to be teachers and inspired to be mentors. And really that's the most important quality to have in order to be a good mentor is the inspiration to do it. And because everybody has their own style. It's just, you just need to have a willingness to fit that into the way you work. And if you do, I think there are really good rewards, because for For masters, I think one thing they find with apprentices is they're not just hiring someone looking for an hourly wage. They're hiring someone who really is looking at this as a possible vocation. So they're engaged, they're interested, they're motivated.
Well, it sounds like it would be an honor to be a part of this program from either side, from the master or the apprentice side of things. So, do you have any success stories that you'd like to share about the apprenticeship?
Yeah, I'm happy to. We've had 19 apprentices enroll. We have eight active right now, and we have two graduates. So not everybody finishes. And one thing we always say is sometimes those are still success stories, because what it's allowed is it's allowed somebody to try out this sector of agriculture, to try out grass-based dairy and see if it's for them. And it's hard to do that in a lot of ways. There's a lot of barriers to entry in the dairy industry in terms of cost of animals and overhead and land. So even if somebody tries the apprenticeship and in the end it's not for them, it's a rare opportunity for them to be able to actually try it out at such a low risk. But we have had, like I said, we've got more apprentices engaged than ever before right now. And we've had a couple graduates. And, one of those graduates is now managing the dairy operation at his family farm. Another one of our graduates didn't want to leave the farm they're apprenticing on, but, there was only so much ability for them to grow in their position. And the real herd manager was the farmer, and he wasn't going to give up those duties. So the apprentice basically, with PASA's help and also with help from a grant from Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture and a consulting grant from Center for Dairy Excellence, they were able to develop a farmstead cheese business as an addition to the raw milk dairy operation, which hopefully will provide them with income and a business related to the dairy that they can grow with moving forward. So those are a couple of good ones where one person's stepping into a management position, a herd manager position, and the other one person is actually starting a new business, a direct market value-added business, as a result of DGA.
Which in the long run benefits, farmers as well, because obviously they'll need to have materials for their value-added products. So,
Yes.
well, and I liked that you mentioned that even the folks that don't graduate, it's still a success story because, it kind of gives them the idea of, okay, now I know what I don't want to do, and they're getting that before they go out and buy a farm and put all these resources into something that they realize that just isn't for them. So
Yeah, I mean that's a big part. It mitigates risk. I mean, we have so many young people who go to college and incur a massive amount of debt and come out with a degree they don't really want to use. So, or they stop after a couple years. And at least with apprenticeship, you're being paid while you earn while you learn, we say.
that's all.
So the risk is lower. But not everybody, like, it isn't always people who say, oh, this isn't for me. Sometimes it's people who say, I've learned enough. We had one apprentice who worked on a farm off and on while he was doing his union job for about 6 months, and then he got enough money and he bought a farm, and he's got, my understanding is, a few milk cows. And so the reality is most of the people of the 19 we've apprentices we've engaged, I'd say 15 of them are still farming, but they might not be dairy farming, or that might only be part of what they're doing. They might have a family milk cow. So a lot of different paths. Farming, farmers are independent. And when they feel like they've got it, they want to go out and do it. And we definitely have some of those.
I really wish they had this for the career that my daughter wants to go into because, I feel you as far as the college degrees are concerned. She is headed to University of Delaware for marine biology, and so I just pray that She'll stick with it. So I wish they had an apprenticeship program for something like that. This sounds wonderful.
Yeah, I think for something like that in research, you got to do the undergraduate work, but when you get to your graduate work, then you often do get, especially in science, you get paid.
Yeah.
And you have those opportunities, and that's where you kind of advance in that field.
Yeah. And what I'm going to do is I will put links to the apprenticeship program. I'll make sure I have those in the show notes for everyone that might be interested in applying. So, and you said they're open year-round, right?
Yeah, just go on Dairy Grazing Apprenticeship, Google it, or go on PASA's website, PASA Farming, and look at Farmer Training and Development, the tab on Farmer Training and Development. You'll see DGA, and you can just read about it. We have a series of blog posts from one of our apprentices who started a raw milk enterprise talking about that journey for her. That is, it's a good read, and it's a good picture of somebody who came into dairy with zero experience and who will likely be our third graduate next spring.
Okay, and actually, we did do an interview with one of the dairy grazing apprentices, I believe last year, and she sang praises about that. So maybe I'll include a link to the interview with her from previous. So yeah, I know she loved her experience there. So. And we would be amiss if we did not bring up the conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd get in trouble if we didn't. No,
Yeah.
the conference is our flagship event. A lot of people, that's all they know about PASA. So yeah, I'd love to talk about that a bit.
And that will be virtual this year, right?
It'll be virtual in 2021. We're actually we're going to be doing almost the same amount of programming, but we're spreading it out over a number of weeks. We're doing a pre-conference from January 19th to I think it's February 1st, basically 2 weeks. And then the main conference will be 4 days, February 1st to the 5th, I think are the dates.
Okay.
So the pre-conference is going to feature sort of focus tracks. There's a livestock track which will feature Will Harris of White Oak Pastures in Georgia, one of the largest grass-fed beef producers in the country, also a lot of pastured poultry. He's going to talk about grazing in the heat. We have a couple of scientists from USDA and Penn State talking about integrating livestock into cropping systems. We have Blue Dog Farm talking about running goats and laying hens with rotationally grazed cattle. So there's a lot of grazing programming specifically within the livestock track in that pre-conference window between January 19th and the beginning of February. And then the main conference, we have sessions of pretty broad appeal with some pretty big speakers who are just really interesting views on the world of agriculture, covering everything from how regenerative agriculture, sustainable agriculture can be a water steward and help improve and strengthen fresh water in this country and the world. To Robin Wall Kimmerer, our keynote speaker, talking about just the intersection between modern agricultural traditions and indigenous traditions. So it should be a great program. Everybody go check out the conference website link at the PASA website, and I'm sure there's something there that you'd be interested in.
Yeah, I look forward to it every year. I the one year I worked a booth for the Pennsylvania Grazing Lands Coalition, and the diversity of the people was so exciting and refreshing. And I mean, there were people that had been farming for generations. There were people that just started. There were people that are looking for land. And there's something there for everyone.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that was your experience. It's definitely been my experience having been a farmer going to it when I was younger and now also running it. It's a great intersection of a lot of different kinds of farmers. Again, PASA really grew out of that dynamic of farmer-to-farmer exchange, and the conferences is our biggest opportunity for that kind of exchange to happen. Having to be virtual is a challenge because you're not going to have those hallway conversations, or at least not as easily, just bumping into people as you normally would at the conference. But we're doing a lot of work to try to create the opportunity for those kind of exchanges to arise from just conversation sessions that are moderated by a speaker to evening meetups over Zoom.
Oh, cool. So they'll have like little breakout sessions of like virtual coffee hour.
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. Well, you know what? I think it sounds like PASA is trying to make some lemonade with these lemons, and it sounds like you guys are doing the best that you can to keep it as consistent as it would have been had it been in person.
Well, you know, I think we've all found COVID has been, I mean, it's tragic, but there have been some lessons to be learned here in a lot of different areas.
Yeah.
And there have been some positives with the conference. And one of them is having someone like Will Harris speak, who I don't think would travel up from Georgia to give the talk he's going to give, but who is really one of the national leaders in grass-fed beef. And a lot of our speakers, it's that way. Robin Wall Kimmerer, we've approached for years to be a keynote, and she hasn't been able to, but she can do it virtually. So our ability to draw a broader speaker panel than we might have otherwise been able to bring in, and also our accessibility for people who can't always drive to State College or now to Lancaster, is far increased. So it's going to be different. I don't think anything can replace the in-person experience, but I think it's going to be rich in its own way.
Yeah, definitely. Well, in the 2019 conference, that was record attendance, right?
It was. We moved to Lancaster. We had been in State College. I described that kind of at the beginning of our conversation. That's where the conference began. But we moved to Lancaster a couple years ago for a number of reasons. And yeah, the conference has just really taken off in attendance since we moved there. And hopefully this year will be even more.
We're going to break the record this year.
I think we might. There's so many unknowns about this, you know, and we really don't know what kind of response we'll get, how many people will register, but we're banking on significant interest and putting together a program that could really, really help people deepen their understanding of what they're doing and also maybe expand their view on what's possible in agriculture.
All good things. I can't express enough how much I appreciate organizations like PASA and folks like you who have this passion to educate and help farmers improve. So,
well, thanks for that, Jen. It's appreciated.
Yeah, definitely. So anything else for the good of the cause? Anything that you want to bring up?
Well, I think one thing I would just say is we're talking about PASA. PASA is small in terms of staff, and the way we get things done really is through partnership. So we don't exist in a vacuum. I've mentioned Center for Dairy Excellence earlier, Pennsylvania Grazing Lands Coalition, Penn State Extension. All of those are organizations, or USDA Ag Research Service, all of those organizations are really important partners for us, capital R, C, and D. We learn from their work. Collaborating with them helps us reach more audiences and just do a better job for all our organizations. So I want to just acknowledge the partners we have in our work and how important they are. And of course, the most important partners are the farmer members and the farmers we serve, who do everything from receiving, from taking part in educational events to actually being our leaders when they're serving as mentors or when they're doing soil health sampling on their own farm for the larger study. So those are our deepest partners, but there's a whole constellation of organizations and people we work with in order to achieve what we do.
Well, thank you for mentioning that, Aaron. I'm sure that it's appreciated by all. So I also wanted to bring up really quick too, is your events. Your events calendar is something to envy. You guys always, always have wonderful events that are taking place. And so I want to just make sure that listeners head over to the PASA website and check out your events calendar as well for more information on things that are coming up. So I'll make sure I include links to all of that. So
yeah, and a lot of those events that happened this year are, you can now view the reporting of on our resource page because we had to do all webinars. So we really learned how to do that virtual programming. And that was a positive, is now, you know, if an apprentice wants to talk to me about grass-fed genetics, I can talk to them about it, but I can also say, go check out the Organic Valley farmer Ron Holter talking about that and his work with breeding grass-fed genetics in Maryland, because we've got it posted on our website. So there's a lot of resources on the website and upcoming events are listed. And I think it's good to check it out now and then, because it's changing and there's a lot of good stuff there.
Well, thank you, Aaron. I appreciate you coming on the show today.
Jen, I really appreciate you asking me and had a nice conversation. So thanks.
Sure. And take care and stay well.
You too. Have a safe and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.